and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Tuesday, to get you through your commute, to get you through the progressive insanity of Seattle and D.C. politics, on top of which we're trying to deal with this corona crisis virus. Or did I say that incorrect? I said that backwards, didn't I?
Yeah.
Oh, whatever. We got a lot to get to. We only have 3 hours to do it. President Trump is giving us a sign, his administration, that nationally things are going to get back to normal soon. But what does that mean for here in Washington State? We'll tell you. Everett Council Member Liz Vogelli is going to give us an update from the city of Everett, how they're dealing with the Boeing shutdown. Plus, media outlets like the Seattle Times are flat out lying. They are claiming that President Trump is responsible for a coronavirus death. We're going to get into all of that, so let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Your health.
Now, right now, the president is giving a press conference alongside Dr. Anthony Fauci and Larry Kudlow just got up to the podium. They're talking about the economic response to the coronavirus crisis. So I thought, actually, since Kudlow is now speaking, let's get into that live.
A couple of key points. This legislation is urgently needed to bolster the economy, provide cash injections and liquidity, and stabilize financial markets to get us through a difficult period, a difficult and challenging period in the economy facing us right now, but also to position us for what I think can be an economic rebound later this year. We started the year very strong, and then we got hit by the coronavirus in ways that probably nobody imagined possible. We're dealing with that as best we can. This package will be the single largest Main Street assistance program in the history of the United States. The single largest Main Street assistance program in the history of the United States. Phase two delivered the sick leave for individuals, hourly workers, families, and so forth. Phase three, a significant package for small businesses. Loan guarantees will be included. We're going to take out expenses and lost revenues. As the president said, eligibility requires worker retention. We will maintain the people eligible, will maintain their payrolls during this crisis period. And on top of that, we will have direct deposit checks of roughly $3,000 for a family of four, and that will bridge to enhanced, plussed up unemployment insurance benefits that will essentially take those up to full wages. This is one, two, three, four. You know, a strong workforce requires strong business. You can't have a job without a business to work for. And the hope here is that the companies that were operating very well at the beginning of the year when the economy was in good shape, we will help them and their employees get through this tough period. So they will come out the other side, let's say this later this spring or summer, and will continue their operations. That's the key point. Now, don't forget, there's income tax deferrals for individuals and corporations without interest and penalties. There's student loan interest and principal deferrals without any penalties. And finally, I want to mention the Treasury's Exchange Stabilization Refund. That will be replenished. It's important because that fund opens the door for Federal Reserve firepower to deal a broad-based way throughout the economy for distressed industries, for small businesses, for financial turbulence. You've already seen the Fed take action. They intend to take more action. And in order to get this, we have to replenish the Treasury's emergency fund. It's very, very important. Not everybody understands that. That fund, by the way, will be overseen by an oversight board and an inspector general. It will be completely transparent. So the total package here comes to roughly $6 trillion, $2 trillion direct assistance, roughly $4 trillion in Federal Reserve lending power. Again, it will be the largest Main Street financial package in the history of the United States. Liquidity and cash for families, small business, individuals, unemployed, to keep this thing going. We're heading for a rough period, but it's only going to be weeks, we think. Weeks, months, not going to be years, that's for sure. And hopefully pave the way for continued economic recovery after this crisis departs. Thank you, sir.
Well, that's Larry Kudlow speaking at the Coronavirus Task Force here again as the
30
president.
30 years or more, maybe. And it's a great voice and it's a great man. So, Larry Kudlow, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to say that that package, and we went over parts of it, but pretty big parts, it really sets us up to, I think, even supersede where we were a month ago. I think we can get up there quickly, and I think it allows us to supersede. It allows us to help these great companies that need help, like Boeing, which is, you know, it had a problem, and then on top of that problem, it had the virus come in. But we'll be helping Boeing, we'll be helping the airlines, we'll be helping the cruise lines, we'll be doing a lot of things, and the money will all come back to us, and it'll come back to us in a very strong form. And before we take some questions, I'd like to ask our great Vice President to say a few words, if you would, Mike, please.
Vice President Pence.
Thank you, Mr. President. The White House Coronavirus Task Force met again today. And on behalf of the President of the United States, everyone on our team, and our state leaders, let me just say thank you, America. People across this country, businesses large and small, are responding to the threat of the coronavirus in ways that are deeply inspiring. People are acting on the President's 15 days to slow the spread, and it is making a material difference. Our experts standing beside us told us that if every American, regardless of whether you're in an area that's impacted by an outbreak of the coronavirus or not, if every American would embrace these guidelines, that we could significantly reduce the number of Americans that would contract the coronavirus and protect the most vulnerable. And as the President reflected earlier, tens of millions of Americans are doing just that. And we're grateful. The focus of our task force, of course, is to slow the spread, to promote mitigation strategies. Beyond that, though, the President has us focus on testing and on supplies and making sure that those that are enduring the symptoms of the coronavirus and those who are ministering to them, our extraordinary healthcare workers, have the support that they need. In the category of supplies, you just heard Dr. Birx indicate that we've made great progress. We have done more tests in the last 8 days than were done in the previous 8 weeks, and it's because of the public-private partnership that the President forged with commercial labs. And I would encourage people around the country to remind your family members and friends, if you don't have symptoms, don't get a test. We want to make sure people who are having symptoms, who have a concern, have the ability to be tested and to have those tests processed. We're continuing to urge all county hospitals, all labs around the country to report to the CDC all the results of the test, as it'll give these experts around us the ability to continue to advise the President on best practices. As I mentioned, we all continue to follow the outbreak around the country and the test results. But as several have mentioned, we're particularly focused on New York. The reality is the New York metro area was 60% of the new cases in the country. And specifically, as a layperson, I can tell you that the infection rates are roughly 1 in 1,000 in the New York City metropolitan area, where they are 0.2% per 1,000 or 0.1% per 1,000 in places like Washington State. It is the reason why today the White House Coronavirus Task Force is calling on any American, first and foremost, if you're in the New York City metropolitan area or elsewhere, to take the guidelines that we issued and avoid non-essential travel. But for anyone in the New York metropolitan area who has traveled, our task force is encouraging you to monitor your temperature, be sensitive to symptoms, and we are asking anyone who has traveled out of the New York City metropolitan area to anywhere else in the country to self-isolate for 14 days. We have to deal with the New York City metropolitan area as a high-risk area. And for that reason, we're taking these steps and asking for the cooperation of the American people. Because of the spread in New York City, we will continue to surge resources. The president has described this. FEMA is coordinating with New York State for the arrival of the USS Comfort in just a matter of a few short weeks. Over the next 24 hours, more than 4,000 additional ventilators will be delivered to New York State as well. New York State has prioritized three alternative medical facilities, and at the president's direction, the Army Corps of Engineers is working on plans to build those facilities out. You've heard the president speak about the Javits Center, the addition of 1,000 beds, and we'll continue. I want the people of New York City and the greater New York City area to know that we're with you. We're going to continue to provide resources to support your state and local officials as they confront the spread of the coronavirus in that great city. On the subject of supplies, we had team meetings today at FEMA, which is working on identifying the critical personal protective equipment and ventilators. At this point, FEMA informs us today that they are distributing 7.6 million N95 respirator masks, more than 14 million surgical masks, and FEMA has already shipped 73 pallets of personal protective equipment to New York, 36 pallets of personal protective equipment to the state of Washington. We'll be meeting again tonight. As you know, the president stood FEMA's National Response Center up, and they are in the lead for the approach to the coronavirus, which is locally executed, state managed, and federally supported. And we'll continue to surge those resources and make sure that they're available. One last word, if I may. The president reflected on the response businesses around the country have brought to this moment. It truly is extraordinary. Now, the president did initiate the Defense Production Act last week, but as the president has reflected many times, we will use the Defense Production Act if we need it to mandate production of critical supplies. But so far, no one has said no. And in fact, we see industries stepping up. The president mentioned Ford Motor Company working with 3M and GE Health to expand production of medical supplies. We heard that McDonald's is now offering curbside delivery to truckers who are unable to use the drive-through to pick up a Big Mac. And I spoke today, and the president spoke last week with Tim Cook of Apple. And at this moment in time, Apple went to their storehouses and is donating 9 million N95 masks to healthcare facilities at all across the country and to the national stockpile. There is a level of generosity that I know is inspiring to the president, and it's truly inspiring to all of us who are working on the White House Coronavirus Task Force. The president's made it clear that he hopes in weeks, not months, to be able to open up the country. But let me make one last encouragement to every American. We will get to that day quicker if every American will put into practice the president's coronavirus guidelines for our nation. 15 days to slow the spread. If every American will do this, I have no doubt that we will slow the spread, we will protect our most vulnerable, and we will heal our land. Thank you very much.
With Vice President Mike Pence, you're listening to live coverage of the Coronavirus Task Force press conference.
Easter, you said earlier you would like to see churches packed on that day. My question is, you have two doctors on stage with you. Have either of them told you that's a realistic timeline?
I think we're looking at a timeline. We're discussing it. We had a very good meeting today. You know, if you add it all up, that's probably 9 days plus another 2.5 weeks. It's a period of time that's longer than the original 2 weeks. So we're going to look at it. We'll only do it if it's good. And maybe we do sections of the country. We do large sections of the country. That could be too. But you know, we're very much in touch with Tony and with Deborah.
Who suggested that?
I just thought it was a beautiful time. To be a beautiful time, a beautiful timeline.
So that was based on the data?
It was based on a certain level of weeks from the time we started, and it happened to arrive. Actually, we were thinking in terms of sooner. I'd love to see it come even sooner, but I just think it would be a beautiful timeline. John?
Mr. President, if you look at what we've just seen in the last day or so, you've seen the number of known coronavirus cases in the country double in just 2 days. Another 95 people have died just in the last 24 hours. New York's governor is saying this is spreading like a bullet train across the country, and the governor of Louisiana is saying that his state may not be able to handle the cases that they're facing by early April. So what are you seeing in all of this that leads you to think that we could reopen by Easter or even earlier?
Sure. We're working with all of them. We can be talking about large sections of our country, because there are sections of our country that you didn't talk about that are doing unbelievably well. They have very little incidence or problem, very small numbers. It's very possible that they won't be ever subject to what's happening in New York. New York is definitely a hot spot. There's no question about it. And you know what we're doing in New York to try and help. And I think we're doing an incredible job. We're going to have the hospitals up quickly, the medical centers also quickly. But we'll just have to see. We have to follow it. We have to see. We're going to look at that curve. We're going to see when it starts coming down. And we'll do the best job that can be done. John, please.
Question for you, Mr. President, Dr. Fauci, if we could. Just looking at this idea of an Easter timeline, and I know that's probably flexible. What are the metrics by which you will make the decision as to whether you can say, yes, we can open up this area of the country, or no, we can't open up that area? I mean, will you be looking at disease numbers? Will you be looking at possible containment, isolation?
I think we'll be looking at a lot of things. We'll also be looking, again, at very large portions of our country. And I will be guided very much by Dr. Fauci and by Deborah and by some of the other professionals that work with both of you. And we're going to see what will be. But that would certainly be, I think that's a goal that perhaps can happen, or at least for a very large portion of our country.
Dr. Fauci, since as the president said, you and Dr. Birx and others will be guiding him in making the decision, where are you now with this timeline, 19 days from now?
So, I mean, that's really very flexible. We just had a conversation with the president in the Oval Office talking about, you know, you could look at a date, but you've got to be very flexible. And on a literally day-by-day and week-by-week basis, you need to evaluate the feasibility of what you're trying to do. And, John, you asked for, you know, what kind of metrics, what kind of data. When you look at the country, I mean, obviously, no one is going to want to tone down things when you see what's going on in a place like New York City. I mean, that's just, you know, good public health practice and common sense. But the country is a big country, and there are areas of the country, and I refer to this in my opening remarks, that we really need to know more about what the penetrance is there. So if we do the kind of testing that we're doing, and testing will always be associated by identification, isolation, and contact tracing, and you find after a period of time that there are areas that are very different from other areas of the country, you may not want to essentially treat it as just one force for the entire country, but look at flexibility in different areas. So I think people might get the misinterpretation. You're just going to lift everything up, and even somebody's going like that. That's not going to happen. It's going to be looking at the data. And what we don't have right now that we really do need is we need to know what's going on in those areas of the country where there isn't an obvious outbreak. Is there something underneath the surface that says, wait a minute, you better be careful and really clamp down? Or what looks there that you don't really have to be as harsh as you are in other areas? So it's looking at information that up to this point, John, we never had. So it's a flexible situation.
Was New York becoming on board? Is New York becoming the epicenter?
Well, it certainly is by far the, if you call it hot, if you call it any word you want to use, it is at a level that I was speaking to Tony before. It's a level that no place else is close. It's very unfortunate. You know, one of the things that's happened that we've done, I think, a really good job on, I think that it's something special what's happened, is I learned from Dr. Birx a little while ago when she said, I learned it actually this afternoon, in 8 days, because we kept hearing about South Korea, and they had a very tough time at the beginning, if you remember. In 8 days, we're doing more testing than they've done in 8 weeks. That's a tremendous turn. And with our testing, it's going exponentially. It's going up, up, up every day. So we're going to be able to do things with this very highly sophisticated testing. And it's also the test itself is considered the best tests. So on top of doing now more than anybody else, we have a very high quality test. That makes a big difference. It also makes a big difference even in terms of opening, because we're going to see those areas like the hot spots. But New York City definitely is a very hot spot.
Steve, when you talk about areas that you could open up, what specifically are you looking at? What states? Are you talking about out west?
Well, you can talk about the Farm Belt. Take a look at the Farm Belt. Take a look at the areas out west. Look at big sections of Texas. I was talking to the great governor of Texas. They've done a fantastic job out there, but they have very big sections of Texas where, you know, it's like numerous states, frankly. But we can have large sections of, if we want to do it that way, we can have large sections of the country open. I think it's very important that we start moving on that and start thinking about it, because our country wants to be open. Our people want it to be open, and they're raring to go. And I think it's one of the reasons that we're going to have a tremendous bounce back. I think it's going to go very quickly. Also, I want to thank, while I'm here, I want to thank Larry for the job he's done, Steve Mnuchin for the job he's done. If you look at Peter Navarro, he's sort of doing different things. He's really, he's a force in terms of getting masks and getting all of the ventilators and all the things. He's been fantastic, Peter. But I also want to thank Congress, because whether or not we're happy that they haven't quite gotten there yet, they have been working long hours. I'm talking Republicans and Democrats, all of them. The House, the Senate. I want to thank Congress, because they are really trying to get there, and I think they will. And I'll see you all tomorrow. Thank you very much.
That was President Donald Trump speaking live at the Coronavirus Task Force press conference. He was there alongside Larry Kudlow, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and of course, Vice President Mike Pence. This comes at a time where we've seen over 50,000 cases of coronavirus, positive cases of coronavirus here in the United States. 60% of the new cases that we are seeing are coming directly out of New York City, which, as the president just called, is the new hotspot. Larry Kudlow, the economic advisor, said he is looking forward to a $6 trillion stimulus package, $2 trillion of which go directly to the consumers, including $3,000 on average, $3,000 check for a family of four, indicating that he thinks the tough economic patch will go on for weeks, maybe months, but not years. We're going to continue our conversation and our coverage of the coronavirus crisis.
Breaking news, coronavirus on the Jason Rand Show.
You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. We have breaking news connected to the coronavirus. Moments ago, the Seattle Police Department sent an email to their officers all across the city saying that beginning today, the King County Department of Adult and Juvenile Detention will not accept bookings brought in for misdemeanor charges except for assault for, DUI, violation of no contact or restraining order, stalking, or communicating with a minor. They say in this email that was sent by Assistant Chief Steve Herjak that special circumstances regarding individual bookings will be reviewed with agencies on a case-by-case basis in consultation with the on-duty shift commander. This is a significant move by the SPD, as I'm talking with a cop friend of mine right now, which will be put in a blog form later on this afternoon or evening. Keep in mind, booking means you go to jail and you await a judge to set bail, okay? It doesn't mean that they're not going to arrest people. They're simply not going to be able to book you. Now, we're talking about cases in which you will not be booked. We're talking about graffiti, shoplifting, property damage under $750, animal abuse, discharging a firearm, prohibited carry of a weapon, obstructing a law enforcement officer, trespassing, vehicle prowling are all apparently crimes that will not be enforced any longer. This in the view, the opinion of one SPD officer who gives me an example, quote, even smoking meth at a bus stop will not get you a trip to jail. The officer goes on to tell me it means we will pull back and not respond to calls unless there is imminent danger to the public. It's a free for all. Folks are on their own now. SPD will be around, but don't expect a response unless you're being actively murdered. This is the biggest free pass given to criminals in years, and they have been many. There have been many free passes doled out by Dan Satterberg, of course, the King County prosecutor, and Pete Holmes, which is the Seattle city attorney. They might as well sound the purge alarms, says this cop, who is being a little bit dramatic, of course, right? But this is incredibly serious. And this is what we expected. In fact, last week on the Tucker Carlson show, when I was on, I made the point to say we were expecting that order to come this week. We heard yesterday from Snohomish County Sheriff Adam Fortney saying some bookings will not move forward because of a fear of the coronavirus being spread into our jail system. We've heard last week, we certainly heard from the King County Corrections Guild president saying that they did not necessarily want bookings to move forward out of fear of the coronavirus being spread. And that is a significant concern, not just for the criminals who are behind bars. I care less about them than I do about the folks who are working in these facilities, civilian workers and corrections officers. Now, we've seen more of these stories happening across the country. New York City apparently will release 300 inmates immediately because of coronavirus concerns. That, according to the mayor, Bill de Blasio of New York City. CNN is saying of all of those eligible for release are city inmates convicted of misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies, all with less than 1 year left on their sentence, as if that should matter. Sorry, it doesn't. I don't like this just giving a pass to folks. We saw that the first inmate in a Texas prison tested positive for the coronavirus, a 37-year-old man. He is known as, he's believed to be the first inmate in the Texas prison system to test positive for the coronavirus. We have the first ICE detainee test positive for the coronavirus, a Mexican national, 31 years old. He's in custody in New Jersey. He's been quarantined and is receiving care, according to ICE, adding that the agency, quote, is suspending intake at the facility until further information is available. Back here in King County, King County Executive Dow Constantine signed an order to suspend the work release program. It's all part of a process to decrease the number of people in custody to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in correctional facilities. The statement goes on. King County says it's already decreased the number of adults incarcerated by more than 300 people in the past few weeks. The goal is to reduce the number of people in the county's two adult correctional facilities to about 1,200. Right now, they're at 1,600. They say that number will allow single bunks for everyone in custody and more room to isolate people who are high risk. How about we just isolate the people who are high risk and not give a pass to criminals? I mean, that seems like something that is reasonable. Again, the big breaking news happening right now at 3 o'clock this afternoon, the SPD sent an email via Assistant Chief Steve Herjak saying the King County Department of Adult and Juvenile Detention will not accept bookings brought in for misdemeanor charges, except for certain circumstances, including DUI, communicating with a minor, stalking, assault, and violation of a restraining order. They go on, he goes on to say that special circumstances regarding individual bookings will be reviewed with agencies on a case-by-case basis. None of this is shocking. But a lot of cops are upset, and they're not just upset, they are concerned with the direction. They are concerned with the direction that this department is going towards. Concerned because they know that when you give a pass to these kinds of criminals, they're just going to be out on the streets reoffending. I certainly don't have a problem with someone who was shoplifting a piece of bread, a loaf of bread from a bakery because they're hungry because they lost their job due to the coronavirus. Okay, fine. I don't need to throw that person in jail. But if we're talking about someone who is doing meth at a bus stop, kind of want that person in jail. Someone who fires their weapons indiscriminately in the air, which is dangerous, I want them in jail. I want someone who's a prolific offender who is car prowling, I want that person in jail. that we're going to give them a pass is absolutely ridiculous to me. I understand the concerns that the city has as it relates to specifically exposing some of their officers, some of the civilian employees to COVID-19. I get it. But there has to be a better way. There has to be a better way to protect these folks than simply giving a pass across the board like this. Because my fear is we're going to have a situation in which a prolific offender is not being treated the way he or she needs to be treated and ends up back out on the streets within moments of getting arrested, recommitting. Because these people clearly don't care. In a lot of these cases, Francisco Calderon comes to mind. This is the guy who sucker punched an individual on Capitol Hill, does some jail time, comes out of jail, I think same day or the next day, decides to throw coffee in the face of a toddler. He's supposed to go to drug treatment. Then he doesn't, and he commits another crime. The only thing stopping some of these folks from committing crimes is the fact that they end up seeing some kind of jail time, even if it's a limited amount of jail time. This is about public safety. Now, I suppose the one glimmer of hope in all of this, of you not being victimized, at least physically assaulted by some of these monsters, is that you're dealing with a situation in which we have a stay-at-home order. And that stay-at-home order means you're not spending a whole bunch of time outside. That stay-at-home order means you're spending more time indoors, so presumably you're not going to be impacted as much as you normally would be by some of these criminals. But I fear doing this now is going to send the message to the bad guys that they're ultimately in the city of Seattle isn't really a punishment for violating certain laws. Because property damage under $750, that still impacts people. Breaking into your car, trespassing on your property, still not just disrupts your life, but causes you physical and emotional pain. You have to pay for that damage of under $750. You have to help your pet that gets abused by one of these people. You're the one, as an officer, who has to deal with someone obstructing your commands. This is not a good scenario, and I can't say I'm shocked, but I certainly am disgusted. I can't say I'm shocked that this would happen in the city of Seattle, because you know what? It's happening in a lot of big cities that happen to be run by progressives. Again, the big breaking news, King County Department of Adult and Juvenile Detention is no longer going to accept bookings brought in for misdemeanor charges, with the exception of assault 4, DUI, violation of a restraining order, stalking or communicating with a minor. The Assistant Chief Steve Herjak, in this email to officers, says special circumstances regarding individual bookings will be reviewed on a case-by-case basis. Got it. That email went out at 3 p.m. We're waiting to hear back from the SPD. And if you're an officer, you know how we got your back. If you want to reach out to us, give your feedback anonymously, you can email us at ktth.com or send me a text at 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. The media is being called out for misleading reports, essentially blaming Donald Trump for someone dying seeking treatment for the coronavirus. Seattle Times is putting this story out via Twitter at least twice. It's been debunked. We're going to get into that when we come back. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. We're going to continue to keep an eye on the breaking news that we reported exclusively last segment, that the SPD is no longer, at least in King County, so it's all across King County, but SPD specifically sent out a note at 3 o'clock indicating that they're no longer going to book, not arrest, but book. They will continue to arrest, but it just means that criminals, with some exceptions, misdemeanor criminals, will not actually get put in jail waiting for a judge to determine what to do with them. There are some significant concerns. As we hear from more and more cops, including cops who are texting in saying they're pretty much doing this in other places like Pierce County, we're going to continue to give to you the details, tell you what this means, and shine a giant spotlight on it. Because there's some stories that I think need that giant spotlight. In some cases, like this one, it's an important story that has public safety implications. Or in the case of what happened last night and still is happening today, it's important to shine a spotlight to show you how completely dishonest the media can be. Shamefully dishonest. Because there are media outlets right now, from NBC News to the Seattle Times, pretending a man died after taking chloroquine phosphate, which is that anti-malaria drug that the president has spent a lot of time talking about and promoting as a possible treatment for the coronavirus. He's not alone, by the way. He's not alone in having this hope. Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York is doing testing right now. They're doing testing with what is essentially a combination of some parts chloroquine phosphate and Z-Pak, which I know some of you guys are familiar with if you ever get what, like, certain types of issues that needs this sort of daily dose. You get a Z-Pak. Now, the media doesn't want President Trump to say he's hopeful with this drug because it's not proven yet. And the president has said all along, it's not proven. He's going with his gut. He thinks that this is going to help. He's trying to spark some hope for some folks. But that doesn't bode well for members of the media who want to bring this president down, even if they're going to exploit your fears over the coronavirus. Vaughn Hilliard of NBC, Erica Edwards of NBC, they published a story out of Phoenix blaming a man's death on President Trump promoting chloroquine phosphate. The wife of this man told NBC News that they were worried about getting COVID-19. They watched the president tout this drug as a possible cure.
But, you know, they kept saying that it was approved for other things. And, you know, Trump kept saying it was, you know, basically pretty much a cure.
Trump kept saying it's pretty much a cure. It's not what he said. Some context to what he said. But this man and this woman, the woman survived, the man did not. They took chloroquine phosphate. The husband died, and now she has a message.
Oh, my God, don't take anything. Don't believe anything the president says and his people, because they don't know what they're talking about. And don't take anything. Be so careful. And call your doctor. I mean, this is a heartache I'll never get over.
Now, of course, I feel bad for her. I do. It's a compelling story, there's no doubt. Except it's not true. It's not true. The man did not take chloroquine phosphate that Trump was talking about. He drank a cleaning chemical used to kill parasites in fish tanks. That's a little bit different. Producer Peyton, I know you're not a doctor, but you did watch an episode or two of Grey's Anatomy. You told me not to talk about
it. The whole season.
I was trying to save you a little bit. There's a little bit different between the medical form of chloroquine phosphate and the form that appears in a fish tank cleaner. Correct?
Yeah, Meredith Grey would never recommend to drink that at home.
He wasn't taking the medication form. And yet, NBC is pushing this story, and the Seattle Times pushing this story, as if they took the very drug that the president was talking about. Heidi Frisbla. I know I'm saying her last name incorrectly because it's spelled P-R-Y-Z-B-Y-L-A. I have no idea how to say that.
Kudos for you for taking it on.
I tried. Let's just call her Heidi P. of NBC News. She sent out a tweet yesterday that got a whole bunch of traction. And it said her husband is dead and she's in the ICU after ingesting chloroquine. And then they put up a quote. We saw Trump on TV, every channel, and all of his buddies, and that this was safe. Trump kept saying it was basically pretty much a cure. She implored Von Hilliard, educate the people. Is that an honest depiction of what the story is about? Is that truly honest in what the story is about? Do you read that tweet and say that she took the drug that Trump was talking about, or that they took fish bowl cleaner? Come on. Now, last night, there was a tweet coming from the Seattle Times promoting this story. And I called them out last night. But maybe they didn't get the update. Maybe they didn't realize that 3 hours before they sent out that tweet, it was debunked. Maybe it was simply scheduled to go out and they had forgotten about it. Okay, fine. Mistakes happen. Today, however, they sent another tweet and it was worse than the one they said last night. This is the tweet that they sent this morning. A Phoenix area man has died and his wife was in critical condition after the couple took chloroquine phosphate, an additive found in an anti-malaria medication that's been touted by President Donald Trump as a coronavirus treatment. You see how they twisted it? Now they say, well, it's an additive that's in the drug that Trump was touting. Oh, okay. Got it. What else is an additive in that drug that other people are taking right now? Salt? I mean, this is so dishonest. And they undercut their own message that this is a serious problem. I'm trying to tell you that no, you shouldn't panic, but yes, you should treat this very, very, very seriously. Even more so if you're in one of the demographics that has a higher risk of mortality. I'm trying to tell people that. The media is trying to tell people that, but they undercut that message when they stoop to the same dishonest games that they've been playing for years to attack this president. It is absolutely absurd, and I'm embarrassed. And you know what? The Seattle Times is going to put out some tweet in the next couple months saying, oh man, you know, things are tough here. Local journalism is more important than ever. Please subscribe. How about this? Do actual local journalism. Do any journalism. What's going on in there, producer Pete?
You should have put Jason Tells the Future because you're going to nail that one.
Jason Tells the Future. I forgot I did that. Put a Jason Tells the Future. He remembers that he does that bit. March 24th, 3:55 p.m. and 12 seconds. Seattle Times going to put out a little bit of a hope. Give us money to Jason Rancho.